The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday, between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, we discuss chinuch, we discuss therapy, we discuss anything that will make our lives better. We discuss how to improve ourselves, our families, our communities, and just everybody around us, just living in the world we want to live in. And although right now we're not living in the world we want to live in, and our hearts are obviously with our brothers and sisters in Israel and what they're going through, there's a lot that we are carrying and a lot that we are dealing with. And throughout last week's show and the show before, we spoke about relevant topics to our life in South Africa. However, a lot of these discussions are being triggered with what is happening overseas. So today we're going to just a very interesting topic, and that is peer pressure. One of the things we need to understand about peer pressure is that we, and this is where it triggered a bit of this conversation, is actually looking at what's happening around the world with the discussion about Israel and seeing how the world is being divided and seeing how people in certain communities and certain ideologies and certain groups are peer pressured to think in one way. So if you are in a society that is taking one side, then you, regardless of the facts, you have this huge peer pressure to think in a certain way. And same thing when it comes to peer pressure regarding the other side. I mean, when somebody sent me a cute quote saying that with one of those memes, saying that, you know, you wouldn't put in your mouth anything somebody tells you to eat with your eyes closed, so why are you believing everything you're hearing with your eyes closed? And basically we're just consistently with this huge peer pressure. However, we're not going to be talking about Israel, and we're not going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about areas that are more relevant to us. And for that, I have here two psychologists in the studio. I have one is a educational psychologist. She is mainly working with teenagers, with adults, but educational psychologist Karen Harwitz. And I have here in studio with me Robin Rosen, who is a clinical psychologist, a counseling psychologist for adults. And we're going to look at the two aspects of adults and teenagers when it comes to peer pressures. Before we start, let's just meet you and introduce yourself. Karen, good afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Rabbi.
A bit about yourself, your practice, your area of work.
I've worked in schools for about 20 years with teenagers in high school. So my practice has many teenagers and adults. I do longer-term therapy work, some short-term work as well. Run groups for teens and adults, and also have a big focus on wellness and health and well-being.
Amazing. Robin, good afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's meet you. Your area of work.
I am a trauma psychologist, really. That's been the main focus of my work for the last 28 years. I'm in private practice, working mostly with EMDR and hypnotherapy and TIR, all the trauma modalities. That's been where my area of focus is. I'm also a mom.
Amazing.
Three boys.
Okay,
and
so
a
you
wife.
Have.
And, yeah.
So a lot to see here about it. So before we dive into this discussion about peer pressure, just a reminder, if there's anything you want to comment, ask Robin or Karen or me, or just comment or bring up a topic or anything. 34519 is the SMS line, or Telegram 061-895-1019. Just to say, last week, and it happens from time to time, people send great questions, but when the show is pretty much over, and unfortunately last week I left the show feeling a bit bad that I couldn't reply to all the questions on the show. So if you have a question, you have a comment, please share with us as it crosses your mind, not much later, so we can manage to answer it and reply properly, and really, really appreciate all your comments and thoughts and questions, etc. So I want to share with you a certain joke that was very popular when I was growing up as a child. I was growing up in Israel, and they used to tell us a certain joke like this about a certain very rich city in Israel. It's considered to be the most wealthiest city. And I think I heard this when I was in first grade or second grade or third grade. And they used to say that once somebody, an educator, came to the school in that city from the government and gave the children an assignment to write a poem about poverty. And one of the kids took the pen and paper and started writing a story. Once there was a family who was very, very poor. So poor, their maid was poor. So poor, their driver was poor. So poor, their cleaner was poor. So poor, their gardener was poor. Everybody that worked for them was very, very poor. And we always used to speak and laugh about that as little kids. And then I came into the culture here in South Africa. And I remember the first experience here, kind of we were in a situation, and I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and we both said the name of the city where that joke was said for many years. And I'm starting with that when it comes to peer pressure. And Robin, I want to hear from you as someone who works with adults and with trauma and with everybody around society, okay? How do we define today our needs? Are they based on our personal needs, in your opinion, or is it what we're seeing and learning as a standard around us, regardless of our financial ability, social, emotional ability, talents? Where do we draw the line of what we expect and what will make us happy?
I think there's a very big difference between our needs and our wants.
Okay.
And I think that we often mistake our wants for our needs. Our needs are our basic needs that we need to survive. And essentially that if we're in tune and in touch with what our basic needs are, everything else is just an extra added bonus, right?
How would you define the difference between our needs and wants?
Our needs are the things that we need to survive. So food, water, love, comfort, safety. But I guess as you move up in the sort of the social echelons, what we perceive to be our needs, or actually our wants, seem to feel as if they're our needs. In terms of, just how I've been thinking about this when, I was asked to come on the show about social pressure. And I think that when your wants get, confused with your needs, it becomes problematic.
So we'll get to that, and we didn't take a short break, but when we come back, Karen, I want to hear your definition from teenagers' point of view, difference between needs and wants, specifically because I see when I look at the definition of what we need to survive, I don't think I know anybody who here in the community who has only what they need to survive. And I hear a lot of kids talking about their needs are not met. So let's take a short break and we will get back to it.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back. And right before the break, we spoke about peer pressure. And I'm here in studio with psychologist Robin Rosen and psychologist Karen Harwitz. Robin, you spoke right before the break about the confusion we have today between our needs and our wants. And Karen, you work more with teenagers. I'm wondering, from your point of view, what are you seeing? What would be your definition to divide between needs and wants? I'll just say before that if I'd actually love to hear from the listeners. How do you define the difference between needs and wants? 34519 is SMS line. Telegram 061-895-1019. How do you define the difference between what I need and what I want? Karen.
I think picking up from what Robin had to say, one of our needs is to belong, is self-esteem and a sense of belonging. And for a lot of teens, the sense of fitting in has to do with having what other people have, being the same as everybody else. Those are developmental needs. So very often the needs and the wants get very, very confused, because if my friend has something, even though it's not a physiological need like for food or shelter or oxygen, it feels like it. It feels like a survival thing in order to fit in.
Okay. So what you're saying is that our needs will actually get confused by what we develop and want and kind of start impacting that.
Well, for a teen, certainly it feels like it's a need.
Okay.
Which is why they often, it becomes a huge urge and almost feels like a survival thing for them to have.
And are they basing their needs on what they feel like they need or what they're seeing their friends have?
What they're seeing their friends have. So I think everything is relative.
Which becomes what they feel they need.
And remember, I mean, we're living in a world where social media is a huge issue, and it's a huge factor in us thinking about what it is that we need. So even if my friend doesn't have something, if I see somebody else across the world with something, it might be something I feel I need as well.
Is there any connection with reality? Are we seeing anybody saying, well, you know, this is our income? And I'm asking to start from the adults, because as adults, and I've seen very strong effect that this concept is having on marriages, relationships, finances. Are we realistic when we define our needs and our wants?
It's a big question. Are we realistic? I think we live in a very difficult community where we have the range from all the way incredibly wealthy to people that are essentially living on the breadline. And we all live in the same community, so I think, you know, it gets very confusing and very difficult for people who don't, for the haves and the have-nots. And sometimes your needs, your basic needs, when you're striving to get a meal on the table, but you're seeing your friend going overseas 3 times a year, and they could be your neighbors.
But why do we all have to live on the same level? I've been to many communities around the world that have wealthier people and people that are struggling, and the wealthier people are the ones that have the pools and have the gardeners and the maids, and the other ones don't. Here it almost feels like we have one standard for everybody regardless what your income is.
I guess our community is very small. The Jewish community is very small
and very homogeneous in certain ways. So, I mean, having spent quite a bit of time in Israel lately, it's kind of everybody has different things, and that seems okay. Whereas here it's a very homogeneous community. Most people in their origins and their ancestors come from the same kind of place. They go to the same schools, the same kind of shul. So there seems to be a sense of, well, we all have to be the same, and it's very difficult because we're not. And I think as time goes on and the financial crises deepen, there's going to be more of a split between who has and who doesn't have. And I think certainly as parents, we so much want to give our children that which will help them to fit in and that which everybody else has. But is that really realistic, and is it fair?
And that in itself creates huge social pressure, because our expectation as adults and as parents, and we sort of imposing on our kids in the hope of a better life for them, creates a conflict, because that may not be what they want or what is best for them, but it's attempting to want the best and do the best for our kids.
So why are we accepting it as a community?
Well, I guess we need to talk about that.
So let's talk about it. So I'll tell you my definition of needs and wants. And I feel that it's so out of touch here. But that's how I would view it and challenge it. I like to define what I need and what I want is what happens if I don't get it. Something that I need, if I don't get it, the urge will grow. So if I need to eat and I don't have it, I'll get hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. And if I need a holiday and I don't take it, it will get worse and worse and worse and worse. And wants is something that if I don't have it, I'll start accepting and letting go of it. I don't see that that's how generally we're living per se. Maybe it's not correct. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it, but is that a definition that perhaps we can work with?
Karen? I think it certainly is, but I mean, remember psychologically, where does a want come from? It comes from an inner need, a sense of not feeling good enough, or that we don't have enough internal resources to build and develop who we are as a person. So I really feel, certainly when working with teens and adults, that we have to work on their inner self. Who are you? What are you about? Mm. What would you be like if you didn't have all of these things? Who are you without the fancy car or without the fancy clothing, for example? And very often, when you take away all of that, you left literally, well, figuratively, with a bare skeleton of a person who hasn't really developed their internal resources. And sometimes you see that with parents as well. So we want to give to mask some of the inner emptiness as well and the internal resources that are lacking.
Completely. Saying we don't do that, which I by the way, I agree 100% that that's what we need to look at. But saying we don't do that, is there any room for reality? And just saying, well, yes, you do have that emptiness. Yes, I feel for you. Yes, I realize that it's difficult, but we just don't have.
Of course there's room for that. Still, sometimes there has to be, but some people find it very, very hard to say that.
Rabbi, saying it in that way is incredibly authentic. And I think a difficulty for many people in the community, because we're striving for stuff maybe that we can't have, there isn't an authenticity about the way that we live. And we're not being our true selves. And that's what Karen is talking about. Getting, you know, the inner resources to be connected to who we truly are as human beings. And what we really do need to survive, actually, is not what we really think we do need. And understanding that, is connecting to our authenticity. But we need to learn how to do that. How to, live without fear. That we're going to, if you take it all to the grassroots, I think of all of this, it's about judgment. It's the fear of judgment, being judged for what I don't have, being judged for, how I speak, being judged for the kind of person that I am versus what I'm expected to be.
But we're seeing it across the border, across the line, across the community. Why are we all so scared of what people think? I would expect to see some people more self-conscious, some less, some more confident, some less. But we're kind of seeing a very, clear picture coming from all directions that we all need, and we all feel judged, and we all feel that we won't be fitting in if we don't have.
I think it goes back to getting in touch with your authentic self. Who are you? What are you about? What are your values? What's important to you? Because if you are clearly in touch with that as an adult, as a teen, as a child, as a parent, it becomes so much easier to navigate the world and the pressures that exist within it.
So any parent listening to the show now says, Karen, amazing. How do I do that? What would you say? What are the first things that we want to start putting in values into our home systems that will say, okay, how do we identify ourselves, our journey, our goal, our vision? Where are we in life?
So I think, it's not an easy thing to do. But I think from a very young age, conversations need to happen in a home about, well, what are our goals as a family? What is our vision as a family? So if parents, couples can start having that conversation, what would we like our home to look like? What are the values we want to embody in our children? And then to start to firstly model that kind of behavior as parents and as adults, and then start to have those conversations with children. What's important? Okay, so this friend of yours might have a lot of money or a beautiful house. Are they nice people? Are they nice to you? What is important to them? What do they strive towards as human beings?
You mentioned couples starting to talk between themselves about it. And, you know, I do quite a bit of marriage counseling, a lot. And so many times I hear one spouse saying, well, I'm in charge of the money, and my spouse is just spending like there's no tomorrow. And I don't have it within me to talk to them about saying we don't have until I explode. And then it comes out very harshly and very badly. And the other one is just not aware. There's a lot of stress around it. Robin, what's happening as adults? Why are we not communicating with each other?
I think, again, it boils down to fear. Fear of being shamed. Why would a husband not be able to say, listen, we've spent too much this month. Let's just wind it in so that we don't have distress. Would it be shame, humiliation? Are they really embarrassed that they're not earning enough? are they feeling the peer pressure because their friends next door are earning huge salaries and their wives can spend in any way they feel. So it comes down to the same.
Which statistically their neighbors are probably also struggling because of them. And are we not seeing, and I know this is harsh and I'd love to hear what the listeners have to say, and maybe I'm out of line here and I hope I'm not going too far. Is it not a feel of shame that we would have, I don't know, driving our kids to school with a car that's worth a million rands, but needing a subsidy for tuition?
Yeah. So the external trimmings are more important than school fees, in other words. I think it's an illness of our community that, because if you go to a school that's not a Jewish community school, you don't seem to necessarily have that. No, not just Jewish. I think that's all the private schools. Because in government schools, you don't have that kind of, nobody really cares how you rock up to school, what car your father or your mother comes and drops you off in. Because it's about, I think along the scale of nobody really in school minds too much who has what, because there's an understanding that not everybody has everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we're even worried to talk about it with our friends that we know they're in the same position. So you could talk with a friend that will tell you, yeah, we also have a hard time financially. And you'll even have three friends sitting together saying, yeah, finances are very difficult. But no one will be brave enough to say, so how about we decide, the five of us, that we're not going on an extra long holiday this year? What's stopping us from people that we're admitting to each other about how we feel and how we're stressed to say, so let's start a little change?
Yeah, I imagine that some conversations would go that way.
Are we seeing some change?
There are some. Mm. There certainly are. And I think, hopefully that would happen more and more, because then it makes it more okay to be honest. But I think the sort of lack of authenticity goes all the way back. I mean, I just always remember as a new and young mother having a baby and going to one of these mom and babes classes, and everybody's children at age 6 weeks were walking, talking and sleeping through the night sort of thing. And
exactly.
I just remember saying, wow, I'm having the most terrible time. It's the hardest thing I've ever done and I'm really not enjoying it. And then what was very interesting is that all of a sudden everybody started to share their stories. So I think it takes a certain honesty and authenticity from people to actually open these conversations up.
But there's also a very shallow element to it. And I was having a discussion with someone not long ago, and she told me, it's so embarrassing. Whenever we go out to eat with friends, everybody's kids are so well behaved. But in our house, my kids are a disaster. And I said to her, that sounds amazing. How do your kids behave when you have guests? I know when we have guests, they're fine. I said, okay, so that's what the other kids are doing as well. When
absolutely.
You have guests, they're fine. Why are we so shallow that we're not seeing that?
I don't know if it's shallowness. I think it's just a fear of judgment, a fear of what other people will think of us.
Even though we know our kids do the same, that when we have guests, they're in great behavior. And assumingly that other kids that we are going to them, they're in great behavior. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that that's the reality all the time.
It's a sadness that it's sort of this keeping up appearances. I mean, I often tell the teens that I see in my practice that, very often they say there's huge pressure to look cool, to act cool. They've got to be fine all the time. And it's exhausting for them. It's absolutely exhausting. And when I start to share with them, that many, many people feel exactly the same, that they cannot believe it. That's the first thing. And the second thing is they feel that, it's always going to be like this, that if they're not cool in high school, they're never going to be okay. And I've shared many a story with them about so many people who found themselves and come into themselves relatively late in life, and it's okay. And it's really about finding our one or many things about ourselves that are important and special and where we shine. I like to use a sort of puzzle pieces sort of analogy. It's kind of, I see even our community or the world and all the people in it as one big jigsaw puzzle. And every single piece is completely different and unique. But without you, it doesn't make up the full picture. And what does your piece look like? And what do you offer and contribute to the world? As opposed to what do you have?
Which means that perhaps as parents, we're investing way beyond that we need in the wrong areas. So if our child is devastated that they don't have enough and we make sure they have a private room and they still feel that it's not enough and we make sure they have whatever it is they need and it's still not, it's because we're focusing on the request of the child instead of what they actually need, which
is that wholeness. You have to have enough internally. You have to have enough within yourself.
Happy with what you have.
But also that you have to feel okay within yourself. What do I have to offer to the world? Who am I as a human being? Those kinds of things are important as well.
Exactly.
And perhaps also, you know, on that note, helping a child when they really, really, really feel that they want something, to identify what it is that's really going on inside. So if they stop and really listen to the feeling that they have inside their body, what is it that their body is trying to tell them? It could be as simple as, I want some supper, you know, or I really just want a hug, mom, or I really just need a hug from my husband. So it's really getting to the base of what that feeling of I want a brand new room is masking, because it's not about the trimmings of a new room. It's about a feeling of emptiness. It's about a feeling of wanting more and wanting something different. That's not the external physical thing.
It goes so much deeper than that. Yeah, 100%. Okay. Yeah. When we come back from the break, I think we're going to go into the harder questions already, into the deeper conversations. And just an announcement, let's just stay with us for. And if there's anything you want to add, comment, 34519 is the SMS line, or Telegram, 061-895-1019.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are here in a fascinating discussion. I'm here with psychologist Robin Rosen and psychologist Karen Harwitz, and we are speaking about peer pressure, teenagers, adults, and everything that comes around with that. And right before the break, we spoke about diving a bit deeper in this conversation. And let's talk about, you know, until now we were talking very clearly about not living according to our ability, not living according to our standards, not living in a way that we should be happy with appropriately. Let's talk about when we actually bend our own moral rules. When we actually find ourselves in a situation as parents that we're not keeping up to our obligation to protect our kids. For instance, if I have a child that I absolutely believe that alcohol is dangerous for them or wrong for them because they're not 18 and it's not okay and it's illegal and they should not be exposed to that, will I be able to say, well, I understand your whole class is going to this birthday party, but I know there's going to be alcohol there, so you're not going because that is my moral responsibility as a parent, or I cannot stand that pressure. Robin.
So if a parent, you know, it's a very difficult one because obviously that would speak to, is the child going to fit in or not? Are they going to have, you know, be included in circles of friends, etc.? But if a parent is resolved within themselves and authentic within themselves, they will be able to handle the fallout with the child on that level, and pass it down in a digestible way to the child, where the child will be able to cope with it and understand and accept that. But it takes, would probably take a hell of a lot and a very, very strong, resolved, self-actualized kind of person to be able to stand in their strength to pass that on in the society that we live in today. Kay, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree. It's not simple and it's not easy.
What are you hearing from the teenagers when they come to you, say, do they come and say, my parents are not allowing me to do A, B, C and all my friends do it?
Absolutely. Okay. And when you listen to them, you'd think all parents allow all things, because they always come and tell you everybody else's parents allow them to.
Exactly.
So I think that parents have to be very clear, as Robin said, within themselves about what's okay and what's not okay, what they feel is a moral duty to stand up to and what's not as important. And if something is as important, you have to communicate that.
We all agree that that's what they need to do. But are we doing it? I'm not saying they, I'm saying me.
Some are
we doing it as a community?
Some aren't, some most certainly aren't, for sure. Mm.
Okay, so we started with something that is clear-cut, like alcohol, that's illegal. What about things that we feel are wrong and unsafe, but are not as clear? For instance, kids want to go on a certain hike or drive somewhere with no adult supervision, and it's something that is kind of a standard or a matric party that we feel, or, and even if our child is over 18 and it's a matric party, that we're very concerned. There could be drugs there, there could be whatever it is. Where do we draw the line, and what are our abilities to actually say something? And maybe we can't, but I'm only talking from the point of view when we can and we still break our moral boundaries because of peer pressure.
So you're on a very slippery slope if you start breaking your own morals and the things that you've told your children you hold dear. Because when is no no? When are you actually then respected for what it is that you have to say? So if you're clear about something, you know, one has to stick with it. I think it's important to communicate why and what that's about for you, and then, you know, one has to stick by that. And I think that it's going to be hard, and I think that there's going to be a lot of outrage and other issues. And I think the worry, though, is rebellion that comes with it. And I think one really has to think very carefully about that, because if you make a whole lot of things not okay, not talking about legal things, I'm talking about things that are more to do with opinion and your general feeling and morality. What does worry me is that when children are not in the orbit of their parents, they will make every effort then to go and break those rules, and then they don't have any boundaries.
That's a different discussion, but that depends, I think, a lot on did we educate our kids or did we control our kids? Because if we educated our kids, and I don't think they'll do that, if we control them, then yes, definitely that's what will happen, for sure, which is part of, and you know, we're really running out of time already, but part of the discussion is, because I do believe that slippery slope road started already when we had to get, you know, when the kids were little, we had to buy ourselves a car that we couldn't afford because everybody else had that nice car, or it started already when we gave our child a phone, even though we felt that maybe they're not ready or didn't feel comfortable to teach them the lines.
Sure.
One of the big concerns I have, and maybe we can take 1 minute to discuss, which will have to be a different topic at a different time, is finances. Because when our kids are growing up, we're teaching them to live in a certain standard, which we're forgetting. I know as our parents, and hopefully ourselves as well, got married, we didn't have that kind of money. And we built up our careers, and we built up our business, and we built our life until we came to a certain level. Now I'm watching young adults dating and getting married, and day one, they're as rich as we are after 25 years of work.
Absolutely.
So either they're taking loans, or they're getting into debt, or they're overdressed, or they're unrealistic.
Or their parents are helping them.
Their parents are supporting
them. Okay, so when are we going to teach them to be independent adults?
So I think, though, this starts from very, very, very early on about work ethic. So you work hard for something, and then maybe you'll get it. So even if parents can afford to buy children something expensive, perhaps that's rather an incentive than something that is just given to them.
Exactly. Because, you know, sometimes I'll watch my kids buy something, and they say they're very rich, they work, they have money, they get stuff. And I say, but don't forget that you have that money for this because all your essentials are covered. Pay for all your clothes, for all your food, for your living, for everything. Now you can afford that extra. You're still not rich. And we're not always understanding that concept. Your thoughts,
I'm just
Robin.
Thinking about Warren Buffett, actually, Robbie. That's exactly what he often speaks about, is making sure that when you buy something, asking yourself the question of, do I really, really need this? And I think we're all guilty of buying things that we don't really, really need. And then our kids observe this kind of behavior, and they learn that that's, you know, how you do it. And if you really, really, really feel that you really, really want this, then you can get it without, as Karen was saying, the work and the steps to get there. So we're all guilty of jumping in and feeling that we really need something when it's a want, not a need. Going
exactly.
Back to the pressure.
Saying that, we also have a reality that we're more worried about our external views and how people see us than ourselves. Just today I was chatting with one of my clients and I asked her, if you would have an opportunity to do, somebody offers you a business deal that you could do with them appropriate business 50-50 in the workforce and investment, but they're making one condition, that all the revenues will be 80-20. You'll get 20%, they'll take 80%. When you look at the numbers, that 20% is exactly what you need. It will make you happy. It will make you financially stable. It's perfect on every level. The only problem is that the partner is going to get 80%. Would you go for it or not? And whenever I ask that question, people tell me generally, no, I wouldn't. Even though it will make my life perfect, I cannot live with the fact that my partner will get 80 and I'll get 20.
Well, that's about ego. Then. Mm.
But that's where we're stuck in many ways.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back just to say that we are actually towards the end of this great show. Very fascinating discussion about peer pressure. And I was here today with Robin Rosen, a psychologist, and Karen Harwitz, educational psychologist, and we've been discussing peer pressure for adults, teenagers, and a lot more. Before we end, I'll start with you, Robin. What do you hope, wish, predict for the community going forward? What would you love to see happen as we go forward?
I think what I would dream that it could be like would be more of an acceptance across the board, where we are a lot more real about what is important and what's not important, where people are kinder to each other, maybe even people are more helpful when they see somebody maybe struggling with not as much, if there could be more sharing, more community, and really people working on themselves to be more authentic about who we actually are.
Amazing. I think that's our job, to talk about it and make that happen, which is a great vision. And one of the few of the topics coming up in the next few weeks are also about taking responsibility and leading that change and not relying necessarily on the organizations we have or whatever, but what can we do as people? And I think it's an extremely important vision. Karen, your hope, vision, thoughts for the community?
Leading on from Robin, I think it's that each person should be able to see their own greatness, what it is that they contribute to the world, to our community, to society at large, and be able to start feeling fulfilled and start to be able to live in their power and live in their truth and be able to see their own unique contribution to the world.
Amazing, amazing. Couldn't agree more. And saying that, after all said and done today in the show and all the worries we have about the peer pressure and you know, about holding our values, we do have a great community and we do have a beautiful place to be in, and a beautiful community, and a place that we can grow and achieve and get to all these things. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you, Robin Rosen. Thank you, Karen Harwitz, too. Great psychologist here in the community. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you, Sana, for putting this together. And to you, the listeners, we'll be back next week, Monday, 2 to 3. In the meantime, stay safe. And hopefully this week we'll hear great news coming while our hearts are here with our brothers and sisters in Israel through their suffer. Have a great day, and we will be back.